Welcome back. Remember, if you bought a house anywhere but Santa Barbara, you didn't pay enough. Joining me, Perry Wong. He's director of research at the Milken Institute. He's an expert in regional econometric forecasting, specializes in analyzing the structure and industry mix, development, public policies of a regional economy. Pretty big guest to have. I'm driving here talking to my friend, and she said to me, how do you get guests like this? And I said, two ways, stalking and blackmail. But I don't remember how I got you, Perry. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate.
You're welcome. Always enjoy being on your show.
Did I meet you? Were you perhaps a guest speaker at the UCSB Economic Forecast?
A long while back.
Okay. And you were very gracious to come on.
We kept our friendship well.
I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. I know you're flying all over and doing a lot of work. So I kind of joke with Perry before we got on the air that I wrote some questions and I said it could take 3 hours. He said 3 days. So we're going to start somewhere. California, coastal towns like Santa Barbara versus inland cities. Dan Walters is a regular guest. He talks about how California is ungovernable and just two different towns and two different countries almost. I should say two different states. So how the regions differ in terms of labor and workforce issues that make them create this disparity?
I think to start, you really have to look at the quality of workforce, number one. The coastal workforce tend to be more educated, more globally linked, and a lot of very highly educated immigrants as well. And that will be the start on the demographic. And also on the industry, and the people do go for job as well as jobs. Industry follow people. So one way or the other, industry in the coastal area tend to be highly high value added. So in other words, they only hire or would like to hire more educated workers. So that would be from the industry perspective. And also, I think if you look at the more pragmatic on the quality of life, which has been a big issue in the past 10, 15 years, especially for the highly educated workforce, the coastal region do offer a lot better in those more temperate climate regions than inland empires and Central Valley, for example. What does that mean then? It actually adds up to one thing. If you are in a job that you would like to advance, and more likely you would like to get more opportunity, so you would like to live in the regions that, number one, are very competitive, but at the same time, you have a lot of opportunity to go after. So when you switch job, you don't face the same dilemma if someone, say, lived in Fresno or someone lived in Modesto, because the job markets are a lot bigger, they are more diverse. And in terms of investment, then you buy houses in the coastal region. Say you are the lucky one buying one house in Santa Barbara, just for example. More likely, even in the worst downturn, you are not going to get too much of a haircut, so to speak. And they do grow back a lot faster than other regions. And by no means that Santa Barbara is the only game in town. So if you look at, say, the San Francisco market or the San Diego markets or Costa Mesa market down a little bit south below LA, they all exhibit one thing, and then the real estate markets are good even at the worst time. If you compare that to, say, Inland Empire, Central Valley, and even Northern California near Sierra the foothill, those markets are softer. And their workforce are a little bit lower in level than the coastal regions, and their industries are not well diversified. So many of them are either in wholesale, warehousing, agriculture, or agriculture-related processing. But even today, not much of processing now resides in Central Valley and in the Empire. So if you look at those two profiles, then you're right. California, I think, in my mind, you can actually cut them into at least two, three, or four regions when you look at what need to be done to I think in your word would be govern, but in my mind would be how to make all regions grow approximately in the same level, and people from those regions actually can take advantage of what they have and actually make a good living out of it. So you're right. This is night and day, I think.
My guest, Perry Wong, he's the director of research at the Milken Institute, M-I-L-K-E-N. We're talking about California. So when you have this disparity, it's evolved, it is where it is, with government, you know, can they create laws, regional laws, or are they stuck with having to do something for all the people, and that'll be good for some portions of the regions and not good for other portions of the regions? I know you're not a politician or an expert on government, but do you deal with that aspect at all?
We do. Actually, the Institute and also my own work, we actually look at what mechanics we can build, or what policy we can formulate to, I wouldn't say even out the advantage. I think the key word is how to turn the disadvantage in those inland areas to be prosperous again. Now, at one point, those regions are extremely productive. If you look at Central Valley, not many people know that California, if you look at the three main productions of what California can offer, now that's beyond good houses and the coastal zone, all those nice things, good weather, so on and so forth. That you talk about entertainment, many people know about entertainment. The whole world knows about entertainment. And technology, we do have, HP, we do have Apple computer. But not many people talk about the third leg of a good table of California, which is Central Valley and an Empire, which offer anywhere between, from tomato to garlic to a lot of places that offer produce that support not only our country, but other parts of the world too. So if you look at that, we are one family, but unfortunately, because the characteristic of industry, number one, and number two, I think the mobility issue, that for the better part or worse part of it, we do exhibit some sort of brain drain, for example. Now, this is not just happening now, but it happened in the past. So some of the more competitive youngsters, you're talking about in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, that they left places like Fresno and other foothill regions in the state and move to the coastal region. So we do have a somewhat weaker educational attainment in the inland areas than the coastal zone. And because of that, the over time, the industry build-up actually affect the future growth. This is kind of unfortunate. So in a sense, I think what can be done for the government, now by state constitution, you cannot have a separate law governing one state. So then I think the next best thing the government can do, I think governments, both the state and regional government, really have to find a way to actually leverage the disadvantage. Now, what do you mean by saying that when people say, well, disadvantage is disadvantage, how can you leverage those? It does, actually. Many regions have done it. Say, if you look at China, they actually manage to leverage the disadvantage. So certainly governments in Central Valley or Inland Empire can do too. What they have, for example, is abundant in land compared to, say, you cannot find a spot to build anymore in Santa Monica, and very difficult to find a spot to build in Santa Barbara. So then the question comes, can we actually leverage those in the regions that have abundant resources, land, for example? Warehousing is certainly one aspect of it, but that has very little to do with education. Now, can we build education along the way of building industry, say manufacturing? That's something certainly we can do. And manufacturing needs a lot of energy, needs a lot of space, that we have it abundant in many cases in an empire, in an areas. So those are some specific that the local government can do. It's not going to be easy, but certainly to turn the disadvantage or your weakness into a strong point is something that I think government has to do.
You talking with my guest Perry Wong, director of research at the Milken Institute, and he focuses on increasing access to technology, regional economic development in California, and that's what we're talking about right now. Now, you mentioned in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, you called it this brain drain of the Central California. So you were saying that it kind of always happened, and then of late, I hear people talking about California in general, even the desirable, you know, coastal towns, is being very inhospitable to business. And you're saying that, you know, you're trying to turn, you called it leverage the disadvantage to like land and leverage the disadvantage to an advantage using land. You mentioned agriculture. I figured you're turning lemons into lemonade for the agriculture.
Better than lemonade.
Right. But what when I read things like that, what do you how do you comment on when people are saying people, you know, industry is moving to Texas, it's just more hospitable, offering tax advantages, and so almost draining coastal towns as well? Is there some truth to that?
There are some truth to that, but I think it's being driven out of context in some area. I think California, for example, is still the number one manufacturing state. Big and small. Now, we do have a lot more smaller company than big one because some of the big one announced their plan move out of the States in the past 20 years or so for one reason or the other. Some has to do with the cost and the other with the regulation and maybe some even is beyond what the state government can control. For example, consolidation of defense funding and allocation. That happened in the early 90s and mid-90s. So one reason or the other, we actually had some substantial losses over time. But I think what we have today is not helpful. I think it actually, certainly we are not in the position to change that at the moment. Regulation, I think, my economist's book is fine. You know, since I'm not a politician and I don't, you know, I don't want to drive into what is right, what is wrong. But I think what's most critical to business and to any investments is certainty, and at least to reduce the uncertainty. I think one of the bad things about regulation is that we constantly have this shovel back and forth in terms of changing. You know, you have the state regulation, then you have the county regulation, then you have the city regulation. So the business have to apply to all three, and then at any of the single point, and even some down to the neighborhood, that if someone decided that we don't want that, and they can drag you to the court case forever. And then while the no company, I think we all know, is just as simple as a household too, that can say, you know, apply for a loan of X amount and sit on that account for, you know, 10 years, and no one would do that. And if it so happened, if other region can say, oh, come here, we can do that for you in 5 months, guess what happened? They move. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's the policy certainty. Now, good policy is always important, but policy certainty is equally important. That goes to regulation too. So I think that's something that I think the government can really look back and say what we can be more efficient about and be good at, I think. People got to understand one thing, right? It's very straightforward. We all want good job, and we all want to live in a good area, meaning no pollution whatsoever. That, I think, is the optimum. But I think in job creations, we ought to think about if there aren't any business, number one, seeding in the location, that's actually is not difficult because Californians are very, very good at creating companies. If you look at Google, you look at HP, Apple, so on and so forth, we always tout that as one of the most important personality, if you will, of the state. But I think what we are not good at, or we tend not to look at it seriously, is the process of growing a small company to a larger one is where jobs are being created. if we cannot retain company and cannot get company, small company, technology company, or whatever company you can find from outside of California to move into California to add job, then we don't have jobs.
Right.
So starting a company is by no means easy, but to grow a company from small to a larger one is actually what California needs, and that's what we need to do.
And you are touting certainty and avoiding overregulation. Talking with Perry Wong, Director of Research at the Milken Institute. You can Google that and find their website. He is going to be speaking in the second week of October here on a panel at the annual California Association of Realtors meeting down in Long Beach, California. And do you intend to comment, to limit your speaking there on what we've been talking about in terms of jobs, or are you going to be touching on real estate at all?
Since I'm asked to be at that meeting at the conference, I think I'm obligated to talk a little bit about real estate as a topic goes. And yes, I will. But I would focus a little bit on demographic and what it means, and also on the industry trend and how that would impact the real estate market as well. So that will be the general topic.
So, well, we have about 2-3 minutes left here. And since I won't be going to Long Beach, my guest, Perry Wong, would you like to give us any little tidbits or anything that you have in mind, any gems that you could share with us?
I think for those of listeners have purchased a house in Santa Barbara, congratulations. And if you still are not certain if you want to buy or not, I think one of the notes I got from you is thanks a millions, and the median price for Santa Barbara is approaching 1 million. I think it's still not too late. I think as far as it goes for the interest rate, I think we all agree. I think the economists in general agree that the interest rate is going up. And because of that, I think if you still have a chance, I think that will be a good time to think about. And I think as for the market in Santa Barbara and all the coastal regions, I think they always look favorable. I have good faith in California, and I think the state will continue to grow. And I just hope that we are going to have a more balanced growth that would including in real estate as well. So more people can afford to buy a nice home and where they can call, this is my house, my home. That would be nice.
I remember maybe in 2011, 2010, I don't remember exactly, I joked that, the Santa Barbara prices, of course, had gone down dramatically. And mm-hmm. I joked that it was like the Nordstrom Rack, where you could, instead of going to Nordstrom's, you can go get the deals. And I got a call once from someone, and he was very unhappy, that I was kind of touting somehow that it was wise to invest in real estate at that time. And maybe even after he called in, maybe prices went down a little more. But amazingly enough, they've come back, not back to where they were. I've heard San Francisco, certain counties have actually come back. But it is healthy. You mentioned interest rates, and as a final word, I'm hearing that interest rates shouldn't go up very quickly, but they might slowly go up, and they're still historically low, and you can still get a great interest rate now. But you're thinking, I don't know what kind of time frame you're thinking.
I think it has to do with how comfortable I think the presidents and also the members of the interest rate setting committee in the Fed. But I think in general, the agreement is it's going to only go up, but the question how soon, and the most consensus would say we are going to have the low rates until probably 6 or 7 months until the new central banker moves in, whoever that might be. But in general, I think the debate is out there that we need to increase the rates as respond to more favorable economic environments in our countries, and also a little bit more stable economic and financial conditions globally. So okay. If that would be the case, it's only going to go up, and you have a couple more months to think about it.
We got to think about it. Well, we'll leave it there. Perry Wong, Director of Research at the Milken Institute. If you want to Google that, Milken, M-I-L-K-E-N Institute. And you're not on the short list for the new...
No, I am only interested in business creation and jobs, not into interest rate setting.
into politics. What's the? What, I can't think of the title of the of the of the of the main guy. What's the title?
Chairman.
Chairman. Yeah, Federal, Reserve, Federal Reserve Chairman.
Yeah.
You remember that UCSB economic forecast director worked there, and I think he ran into the federal chairman in an elevator once. He accidentally bumped into him. I always tell that story, but I can't remember either one's name, so not a very good story. Perry Wong, director of research at the Milken Institute. Great, as always, talking to you. Thank you so very much for your time.
Nice to be on your show.
Okay.
As always.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Isn't that awful? Volcker? Who's the current guy? Volcker? Or who was the guy forever that was the main guy? Was it Volcker?
I think so.
Bill Watkins, economic research forecast at UCSB, knocked into the guy before Volcker. Who was the guy that was there forever for most of the... Greenspan. He ran into Alan Greenspan. There's my great elevator story. And unfortunately, Perry Wong did not hear it. Milken Institute, check it out. When we come back... we've got Motoring with Mark and some housing market update from a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac economist maybe. And what do horses and prisoners have in common?